Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of Atlanta Legal Experts. My name is Emily Rowell and I'm with Peachtree Offices. I'm your host this morning. I have Rich Casanova as the producer today.
Not the other host, but yeah, producer, engineer. I'll be taking some photos for social media as well, and you got a great lineup in the studio here this morning.
I'm really excited about this morning. We're actually going to be talking about premises and commercial liability with Walt Murray, who's with Horizon Screening. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Doing great.
Good. And Jeff Melcher with Gordon Reese. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we have Sean Williams with the Cochran Firm.
Good morning.
I'm so glad that you guys are here. This show has been sponsored by 3A Law Practice Management, helping lawyers start and build their practice, and also by Peachtree Offices, work virtually anywhere. So we're going to just go ahead and start with Walt. Again, thank you for coming this morning.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And you kind of brought the guests in yourself today.
I did. I've known Jeff and Sean for a long time, worked with both of them on a variety of things, and two guys that I'm always entertained to spend time with, so I thought it'd be a good opportunity to sit down and talk to them a little bit.
Fantastic. I'm excited. So you actually have been in the investigations and background screening business for more than a decade, and Walt's experience ranges from pre-employment screening, including criminal and civil background checks, drug screening, motor vehicle and credit history, to surveillance and other field investigations. And you are a graduate of Kennesaw State.
I am.
I went, but then I got married.
That happens.
Yeah. I'm pregnant right away, so. Yeah, I had to stay home with a baby. So tell me, how did you get into what you're doing now?
It was kind of a long and winding road getting there. I had worked in corporate security with UPS for a while, and then had done a couple other things, but always just had that bug. I come from a law enforcement family, and kind of found my way into the business initially as a salesperson, and kind of worked my way sideways into more of an operations and management, and kind of do whatever you have to do with the business type of person. So now I handle everything from actually doing field investigations to managing investigators and staff and all that fun stuff.
So you've kind of had the whole experience from all around.
I have. It's kind of run the gamut.
Gotcha. And I remember you telling me before your dad was, what was he again? He was
right. He's a retired FBI agent.
Gotcha.
And then he's been in the business for a long time as well.
Awesome. Awesome. So you love what you do?
Love what I do.
I do too. I love waking up in the morning. It's fun. So tell me, how does your company help support businesses and their needs for screening tenants and employees?
Well, we're kind of positioned in an interesting place. We, of course, up front with the pre-employment background screening aspects of our business, help businesses make decisions on who the right people to have on their staff is, making sure that they know, you know, criminal histories, employment histories, driving histories. Sean and I talked a little bit about this earlier in the week and kind of want to hear him discuss some of this, but making sure that if you got a truck on the road, you know what your driver's background is, you know, what his driving history is. So being able to work in support of that. Also, if there are other issues that come up of theft or fraud or other issues, we're able to work with the staff on that as well.
Oh, cool. So tell me, because obviously you work with attorneys a lot, so tell me a little bit more about how you can help them.
We actually work with a wide range of attorney disciplines.
Okay.
A lot with, of course, insurance defense, and a lot with folks like Sean who are on the plaintiff's side, gathering information, looking at accident scenes, doing interviews, doing background checks, locating witnesses. Wide variety of services we offer there, and then of course surveillance. So that ranges from workers' comp issues to domestic issues and divorce cases, child custody. So we're able to offer a lot of different services to a lot of different people.
So is there one more often than another, or is it just really?
It really kind of runs in cycles. We'll see several divorce cases right on top of each other, and then.
Right.
We kind of get into the litigation time of year, and then you get to the spring funny. Where people are out and about a little bit more, and then around the holidays we see kind of an uptick of divorce work.
So. Yes, I'm familiar. I had several family law attorneys in around the holidays. Yeah. They're working hard.
Yeah.
So tell me, is there any other type of business that you work with other than law firms?
Sure. Yeah, we do. We largely are working with kind of mid-size to smaller companies a lot. Also volunteer organizations.
Okay.
People have seen the need for background checks, particularly with people working for with children or older people.
Okay.
Making sure that if they've got volunteers who are interacting with people who are young or old, they need to make sure that they know who's there. And, you know, they're not on the sex offender registry. They don't have a history of, you know, scamming people. And this time of year, as we move into the spring, we see a lot more, you know, outdoor activities, a lot more volunteer activities.
Okay.
So we've already seen an uptick there of volunteer background checks.
So home, I'm sorry, school or like a home care place?
Maybe home care place. School? Private school. I mean, really anybody who needs information on somebody.
Okay.
We're a good person to talk to about that.
Awesome. Well, cool. So why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, and then, of course, we'll come back to you at the roundtable.
Sure. You can reach me at our office at 404-556-1349, or horizonscreening.com is our website, and there are a couple email addresses there that'll point you to me.
Awesome. Thanks again for being here. So, okay, just a reminder that this show has been brought to you by 3A Law Practice Management and also Peachtree Offices. And today we are talking with Walt Murray and Sean Williams and Jeff Melcher about premises and commercial liability. I'm going to get that one out too, I promise. So we're going to go ahead and go over to Mr. Sean Williams with the Cochran Firm.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great.
Good, good. It's good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
And so I'm going to go ahead and read his bio. Sean Williams is a partner and trial attorney in the Atlanta office of the Cochran Firm, Cochran, Cherry, Given, Smith, Sistrunk, and Sams. Mr. Williams pursued an academic and football career at Miami University in Ohio, where he received a bachelor's degree in finance in 93. He obtained his Juris Doctorate from Georgia State University College of Law in 1996. Mr. Williams is currently licensed to practice law in the federal courts as well as the trial and appellate courts of the state of Georgia. During his legal career, Mr. Williams has been committed to fighting for injured people and their families in the areas of trucking litigation, premises liability, medical malpractice, nursing home litigation, products liability, and business litigation. His tenacity and work ethic are key factors in his ability to get full value settlements and jury verdicts for his clients in even the most complex cases. So a range, for sure, of things that you work on.
Who did that? Walt did a background check on me?
Yeah. I did it, Sean.
Yeah, so how did go ahead and tell me how you got into practicing law.
I actually got into wanting to be a lawyer. My uncle went to law school. He's a lawyer and a judge in North Carolina. And from there, as a young man, I found the interest of doing it. And I loved those old Perry Mason shows. And so I wanted to be a lawyer pretty much as a young age. I didn't know what type of law. I actually initially wanted to do sports management and sports entertainment law. I was a finance major. And then in 1997, I was fortunate enough to meet a gentleman considered one of the best legal minds in our century, Mr. Cochran, Johnny Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me an opportunity I couldn't refuse. And I've been with the firm since 1998, practicing. I had specific cases with Mr. Cochran before he died and started partner up with my senior partner, Hezekiah Sistrunk, and my other partner, Jane Sams. And it's just been a wonderful ride.
Awesome. Awesome. So what is it like to practice law in your hometown?
It's actually fun. I consider it a little bit of an advantage. Growing up here, I grew up in Decatur, Georgia, lived in Atlanta as well as Decatur, went to school in the area. I went to Lakeside High School. I went to Georgia State Law School. And so when I believe when I'm relating to issues in a case as well as to a jury, I think it's advantageous to kind of have a feel or understanding of the people you're talking to or the people you're trying to convince regarding your points.
Mm-hmm.
So it has helped. You don't necessarily need it. I've tried cases throughout the nation. And sometimes being in new areas, bringing a new perspective is also an advantage.
Right, a learning opportunity as well.
Exactly.
And plus there's people from everywhere that are here as well, so you kind of got to learn each person as they come.
Exactly. That's why I was glad I left the state for a little while. I went to college, and I got a different perspective of how people live besides the South. So the Midwest was good until it snowed. I need to get back.
Well, I'm glad it's not snowing out here today. So tell me, personal injury law, what is it about that you kind of fell into that?
Well, Mr. Cochran, after the famous OJ case, a lot of people just assume Mr. Cochran was totally about criminal cases. He actually had a very, very successful civil practice in L.A. and in New York. And as a result of the opportunities he was given after that trial, he set up offices across the nation that deal with providing justice in a civil matter. And so we've been handling civil cases. And since 1998, I've been fortunate enough to handle cases dealing with civil rights cases as relates to people being unfortunately injured or killed at the hands of governmental entities or police officers. I handled the Katherine Johnston case where the 92-year-old woman got killed few years ago. Handle areas of premise liability cases when people are injured on individuals or businesses' properties as relates to a duty they're owed, and I had several cases with that. I do a lot of trucking litigation as well as commercial litigation in the areas in the perspective of helping people who are seriously injured or representing their families when they unfortunately are killed. And so okay. I've kind of fallen into that, all of those categories. The bottom line is I want the opportunity and perspective of trying to help people
mm-hmm.
who can't necessarily fight for themselves and do it in a way that represents not only the legacy of Mr. Cochran, but whatever perspective I'm trying to show as relates to my own practice and my professionalism.
So tell me, how do you make sure, you talked about his legacy, Mr. Cochran, so how do you keep that alive and thriving?
I try to do it in our work ethic and how we represent our clients and the results that we get. I believe that great results first start with a great client, and then secondly they start with a work ethic of, as Mr. Cochran used to say, preparation, preparation, preparation.
Mm-hmm.
There's no substitute for hard work. There's no substitute for getting a good client. And when you have those things and the opportunity to do it, you do it in a way that you feel like you're fortunate to represent people because they're the only voice you got.
Right.
So it's been fun.
Good, good. And is there any other like area of law that you kind of want to venture into?
Retirement.
Is that law?
Estate planning.
Estate planning.
At some point. You know, the great thing about law, there's different areas. Like I said, I started off wanting to be a business lawyer. I couldn't imagine myself doing that. But being a trial lawyer, and Jeff can talk to you as well about this, it's a great opportunity. It's a great experience. It's very stressful. It's very time-consuming. It's intense, and you know, doing it at the levels that Jeff and I have been fortunate enough to do it. At some point, sometimes you just want to sit down and relax a little bit. So
sure.
Vacations are important.
Vacation law.
I got enough trying to. I'm not venturing anything else. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing on a daily basis and get better.
Gotcha.
Because the practice of law is the practice. I've been doing this for 20 years, and I've been fortunate enough to have some good outcomes, but you can always learn from each other.
Right.
So I'm just going to try to continue to get better at what I'm doing.
Well, I know this is like asking which one is your favorite kid, but what type of cases do you like the most, enjoy the most, feel the most passionate about? Sorry. Yeah, which kind of cases that you handle do you really find yourself being most passionate about and enjoying the most?
In all honesty, it can really flow in any of those practice areas of premise liability or trucking litigation or civil rights cases. And the reason it can, because it really depends on, you get the most joy of helping people in an unfortunate situation. Unfortunately, bad things happen to good people. And if you can get an opportunity in using the laws and the rules of the road or the regulations or any statutes or the opportunity that the justice system that we have has set up to bring a bad situation, turn a bad situation to a good situation, is some joy in that. Typically dealing with kids, helping kids or helping a family who has lost a young one or lost someone that was very close to you. You feel some pride about that. And particularly when we deal with wrongful death cases, I like the opportunity to tell the story of what this person meant to their family, to the community, and do it in a way that the jury kind of puts a value on that person's life. That's always hard to do, but it's kind of rewarding when you get to an opportunity to tell a story of somebody's and what they meant to a lot of people in their community, and the jury recognizes that and award a verdict. It can be rewarding.
So tell me, you seem like you really know what you're doing. What would you tell?
I don't know about that. I think Jeff can tell you something different. No,
What advice do you have to young aspiring lawyers out there?
Stay focused. The reality of it is a lot. There's a lot of areas going on. There's a lot of things moving as relates to litigation or whatever work. But stay focused on what your passion is and your goal. Do what makes you happy. Like I said, the profession of legal profession is a great profession. I wouldn't want to do anything else. But it's difficult. It's emotionally and physically draining. And if you lose perspective of the bigger picture as relates to yourself, relates to your family, as relates to why you entered the practice of law in the beginning, you can get off track and
right.
Staying focused and being passionate and loving what you do, particularly when you're in the office at 4 o'clock in the morning getting ready for a trial. You need to remember the ultimate goal of why you wanted to do this.
Right. Just keep focused.
And then the reality of it is, take the opportunity that you have in the practice of law serious, that you get the chance to represent somebody and be a voice for somebody that typically may not have an opportunity to do it or who have hired you to be their voice. Even if you're representing corporations, whoever you're representing, take it serious. It is the practice of law. I know we have a lot of legal jokes and lawyers are picked on, but the reality of it is this country is a big part of why this country is great is because of the legal system, which I think we have is the best in the world, and lawyers who have taken the time and taken this craft serious to make this place a better country. And so I think any young lawyer who gets into the profession needs to take it serious and do it in a passion to make this world and this country a better place.
Great answer. It's almost like you know, wrote that down first. That's awesome. So go ahead and tell our listeners how they can reach you.
I can be reached at the Cochran Firm Atlanta. We have offices here on 127 Peachtree Street and Suite 1400, Atlanta, Georgia. Our telephone number is 404-222-9922. We have our website is www.cochranfirm.com or www.cochranfirmatlanta.com. And they can reach us in any of those opportunities or ways to reach us.
Great. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And just a reminder to our listeners, we are Atlanta Legal Experts Radio. Thank you for tuning in. And our show is sponsored by 3A Law Practice Management and Peachtree Offices. And we are talking about premises and commercial liability today. Well, we will be in just a moment after I finish interviewing with Jeff Melcher. Good morning.
Good morning, Emily. How you doing?
Good.
I have to lean into the microphone. Okay.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. So you are with Gordon Reese.
I am.
And he is a partner in the firm's Atlanta, Raleigh, and Birmingham offices and serves as a managing partner for the Birmingham office. Mr. Melcher specializes in commercial and insurance litigation. He has more than 25 years of litigation experience, which includes varied representation of civil trucking and transportation clients, and matters involving D&O and commercial litigation claims, insurance coverage, bad faith matters, business disputes, general liability, professional malpractice, real estate, premises and casualty, appellate, and domestic litigation. He has tried numerous civil cases in the state and federal courts and is admitted in Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and North Carolina. Mr. Melcher also has an extensive background in employment law litigation. He has successfully defended employers in a wide range of employment claims, including restrictive covenant litigation and negotiating employment contracts. Awesome. So tell me a little bit about you.
I'm originally from Augusta. Sometimes I think back to just how much that shaped me, because Augusta is a small town and you can actually see people working as doctors, attorneys, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a nice place to grow up. Went to Vanderbilt undergrad and Wake Forest for law school, and have pretty much been in Atlanta practicing law since then.
Awesome. So what made you want to become a lawyer? Just watching them, like you said?
Yeah, I got an opportunity. My father was a dentist and oral surgeon in Augusta, so I got the opportunity to know him and his colleagues and other professionals in Augusta. And as I like to joke around, I didn't like saliva enough to go into his office. So I was terrible at math, so I picked law, and I'm glad I did.
That's good. Yeah. So what do you enjoy most about your practice?
It's changed a lot over the years. We now have a fairly large litigation practice in this office in Atlanta, and we've obviously set up offices in other cities. And the firm I'm with is a national firm with about 600 attorneys and I think 35 offices. So, you know, I'm doing a lot more management now, but the hands-on aspect is great. I don't think there's anything as exciting as going up against somebody like Sean in a big case. It is a lot of fun, and we joke around and use swear words at each other, but it is a highly intoxicating sort of thing to do, to have someone place their trust in your hands. And
right.
And now I'm getting to enjoy, you know, bringing younger attorneys along too, and that's a really special experience as well.
That's awesome. So you get to shape them.
Well,
a little bit.
Yeah, I I think that's actually a good way of putting it. And we've got some great young folks in there. They're really coming along quickly, so it's a lot of fun to see them grow.
Good. So is that your favorite area of practice, the trial?
There's less and less cases that get tried all the time because of, you know, the court system is pretty much at the max. So you have to do a lot of things to get your clients' cases resolved otherwise. So we actually do a lot of what we call discovery, depositions, and that sort of thing, which puts the case in a position to either have it decided by the judge, on what we call summary judgment, or you go to mediation, and sometimes cases settle there.
Sure.
It can be a real challenge to get a case tried for a client who wants it tried quickly these days.
Gotcha. So if you do actually end up trying a case, what is the secret to obtaining successful trial results?
I think that the secret for any good result is to have actually tried to win the case in discovery. With your depositions and your motion practice, if you're trying to win a case at trial, and you haven't done that, good luck to you. Because you know, it can happen, mm-hmm. and I have seen many cases where, you know, it was somewhat of an unusual result. But you know, as Sean said, it if you practice your craft, it'll translate into the courtroom.
Gotcha. So if you're not practicing law, what are you doing besides swearing?
Boy, here's a loaded question.
Yeah, I'll just go into the more sanitized version. I grew up playing golf. I like cars. I've got two boys. I've got two dogs.
That's a lot.
There's plenty right of sports there. On TV, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Sure, sure. Awesome. Did you want to ask him any questions?
Well, I know for both these guys, I've worked with both of them. I've worked opposite both of them, I believe. I know I've worked opposite Sean a couple times and work a lot with Sean now. And in the time that I've been in this business, I've seen a lot of evolution. You talked a little bit about it, Jeff, as far as from the court side. What are some of the trends that y'all are seeing in commercial litigation and some of the changes that are going on in the industry right now? I'd be real interested to hear it kind of from both sides of the table here.
I don't know how trendy commercial litigation is. You know, people like to talk about stuff like mediation and arbitration. I think it's a lot of the, I think investigation of a claim early on has really changed. Sean and I have had cases where that was just a huge aspect of the case from both the plaintiff's perspective and from the defendant's perspective. It's really hard to, you know, modernize or streamline or change the flow of litigation. The one thing you can do is to be more proactive before an incident occurs and then if an incident occurs. For instance, our firm set up a rapid response unit so that if a client has a, you know, a major incident, whether it be employment or whether it be a trucking accident or what have you, there are people that, you know, are in place to go to the scene, interview people, and, you know, the good plaintiff's attorneys are doing that as well. And I think that's where you can help yourself these days.
I agree with Jeff. There's nothing really new under the sun in litigation. The reality of it is the same principles that our founding lawyer fathers said are still in place today. Obviously, the world has changed. And as a result of the world changing with social media, people are more in tune with things that are going on. When a story or a case hits or facts, a lot of people know about them. As Jeff said, to be a very good trial lawyer, whether you're representing a defendant or representing a plaintiff, when things happen, you need to move quickly. You need to have a team already set up and be prepared. The reality of it is obtaining information in a quick manner, in a adequate manner, in detailed as possible, is very, very important. The other thing that's interesting about the practice of law now is that we live in a world where we have reality TV, we have all these television shows that portray courtrooms, so people look at lawyers and the process a little different than they did, say, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago. They expect us to put on a show. They expect us to do everything and try the case in 35 minutes with commercials. and so when you're litigating a case, like Jeff said, throughout the process, the most important part is before the litigation and getting prepared. During the litigation is doing your discovery and learning as much about your case and the other side's case, but then presenting it in a story and in a way that educates but entices people to be involved or engaged in the process. And we live in a world where that becomes more and more difficult because of the world we live in with social media and television shows and movies and things of that nature.
Seems like everybody's educating themselves and they seem to know it all on the
I've had a few trials where actually jurors went on the internet and started to do some things and do some research, which is legally a no-no.
Right.
The only thing a jury should be considering in a case is the evidence that's been presented. Mm-hmm. from the witness stand or evidence that's been admitted by the court. So, we live in a different world and everything is quickly, quick. And so you, as a lawyer representing your clients, whether it be a defendant or a plaintiff, you need to be prepared to deal with that.
Jeff, let me get back to you before we close. I'd like to close with your contact information for everybody that's listening so they can reach you.
Sure. It's J Melcher, J-M-E-L-C-H-E-R at Gordon Reese, and Reese doesn't have an E at the end. It's R-E-E-S.com, and then the phone number for the Atlanta office is 404-869-9054.
Awesome. So now we can continue the roundtable discussion.
Yeah, and Jeff, what all does your firm handle, by the way? I know that you do the commercial litigation. Mm-hmm. Do y'all handle divorces or anything like that as well?
We have it depends on the time of year, but yes, we always have a couple of domestic cases going in my practice.
Okay.
And the firm itself is a national firm, so we handle everything.
Okay.
And you have a different position in the Atlanta firm, correct?
I'm a partner in the Atlanta office and assist with some management roles, but run the Birmingham office.
Gotcha.
Well, you both kind of alluded to the investigation part of it. Of course, that's my area of expertise and experience. And I have seen that trend over the last couple of years of particularly the plaintiff side jumping on finding witnesses as quickly as possible, things like that. Obviously, y'all are handling two different, oftentimes distinctly different clients. Jeff often handling, larger corporate clients and insurance companies. Sean handling an individual who's been injured or otherwise, has a claim against that company. What are the things that y'all are recommending to your clients as issues come up to prepare themselves and to help, Jeff from your side to help mitigate loss, and Sean from your side to prepare themselves for filing that claim and for, working through that process?
You want me to go? I think from the defense perspective, we lack one thing that the plaintiffs have at their disposal, which is there are HIPAA and other bars, and for instance, they have the plaintiff's bar has access to their actual client. The one thing that the defense should try to do is to line up the attorney-client privilege as quickly as possible. If you do an internal investigation, as we saw in our case a couple years ago, mm-hmm. Sean, a lot of that's discoverable, and some of it can be admitted into court. If you engage an attorney, it's a closer call because that generally is shielded by the attorney-client privilege. So what we try to get our clients to do is to understand that, yes, it's going to cost some money to have us involved from the beginning, but there are huge advantages to that. And the other thing is, when you're dealing with law enforcement or you're dealing with some sort of investigating authority, actually having an outside attorney there tends to carry some weight with those officials too. So we encourage that a lot.
And the reality is what we were talking about is the one thing about a plaintiff is typically when an incident happened, a client who's seriously injured doesn't have an opportunity to contact a lawyer immediately. The lawyers representing corporations or the defendants or insurance companies, like Jeff alluded to, very good ones like Jeff, they go out immediately and start collecting evidence. We don't usually have that opportunity, so we're a few days behind. So when we get involved in a case, we immediately need to hire people like Walt to help us collect evidence as soon as possible. Different experts, if it's in the area of a car accident or anything, we get accident reconstructionists. We get people to inspect things as soon as possible because the reality is we need to catch up. Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly enough, once the lawsuit is filed, we're typically at an advantage for this perspective. We know our claims. We know what we're doing. And like Jeff said, we have our client that we have the opportunity to talk to and get information from that representing a corporate defendant or carrier doesn't have that opportunity until litigation starts. So you have to take advantage of those different areas of those windows. But the bottom line is, living in this legal world today, you can't do it unless you are vigorously taking, investigating your claim, getting as much information as you can before the official litigation starts.
Right. So that must make you a busy man, Walt.
It does. It does. And it really raises some challenges for us. When I'm working the defense side, of course, I'm under the same constraints that the defense attorney is. I can't contact the plaintiff. I have to be very careful about those sorts of things. I have to be careful about how I gather my evidence. There are all kinds of pitfalls there that I have to be hyper aware of. From Sean's side, I do have a little bit more leeway because I am able to talk to the injured party and really get their perspective, find out who witnesses are. But one of the biggest challenges that I face in dealing with these issues is if much time goes by, witnesses disappear. Mm. Witnesses are notoriously, you know, they have their lives going on. They have 5,000 other things that get bombarded with between the accident and the time I get to interview them. So
right.
we want to be able, you know, I see more success, you know, better product from my side when we're able to get out there quick, interview mm-hmm. witnesses while it's still fresh on their mind, catch them before they disappear on their, you know, next job in Montana or wherever, and be sure that we're able to get those interviews on paper as quickly as possible. And that is one of the things that I've seen over the last few years, plaintiff's attorneys really jumping on that as quickly as possible and making sure that they do those things. I think a lot of times from Jeff's side, it depends on the client.
Well, certainly. I mean, you have to have the client comfortable with the economic and there are other issues too. I mean, it's logistical. You know, can they get somebody there? Or do they, you know, do they want you to handle this? Or and so they have to make some decisions, and it can be difficult when you don't know the extent of an incident.
Sure. Yeah. And unfortunately, as good as many of the police agencies and police officers are, a lot of times their reports are lacking in information. Mm-hmm. And so we start digging in. We realize there was a case I was working with Sean on not long ago. What was in the police report ended up being completely different from reality. And so that became a real challenge real fast, and real challenge for Sean and his team, because all of a sudden I'm kind of dropping that hand grenade in their lap and they got to go figure that out. So,
right.
So there are a lot of challenges that can come, but I think that time frame is often one of the biggest factors in making sure that the defense side has the right information and the plaintiff's attorneys do too.
One of the things that I think is important in litigation and most of the arenas of law that we all practice is the information that our clients or the other side had before the issue came in place. So, for example, in a premise liability case, one of the central issues in most of those cases is what information did a property owner know about any dangerous condition or any dangerous situation? As a result of that, when we get involved in a case from a plaintiff's perspective, we're using people like Walt or doing our own investigation to determine what information the defendant may have had about that dangerous condition, i.e. we pull prior crimes on the property, prior mm-hmm. information. We're looking for if there's any issues with their employees that should have put anybody on notice regarding the dangerous condition that's at issue. When we're dealing with commercial litigation like Jeff was talking about, we want to know as much as we can about the driver, about the witnesses in the case before we get started so we can understand the history. Because typically, as someone once told me, you don't just fall. You've usually been tripping for a while. And people usually end up on the ground. They have a history of doing something previously. And that actually also goes for your client. We live in a world that our clients are all on social media, have a history before they ever meet me. And one of the hardest things that I've had to learn over the years is if you don't like your client, jury probably is not going to like them either. And I don't care how bad they've been injured. The reality of it is people don't like to compensate people for injuries that they don't like. So you need to find as much as you can about your clients. Typically, in most of the cases that I'm dealing with where the person is seriously injured, the defendants are going to get someone to do surveillance on our clients to make sure that they're not malingering or lying about their injuries. So you need to make sure you need to do the investigation part of your client first and try to. And it's always difficult. People hide things. People are not always up front with you. But it's just as important on the plaintiff side to know everything about your clients and as about the other side's clients to be really successful.
Can you use social media? Do you use social media?
Oh, it's one of the new things as relates to litigation and the discovery process. When I send interrogatory requests or requests for production of documents, we're seeking all types of information regarding emails, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You'll be surprised how many people involved in serious incidents go and tweet or Facebook or talk about those issues.
Of course.
And I've seen it in cases. I fortunately haven't had it with one of my clients quite yet, but I've seen where defendants have used, very good defense lawyers have used in cross-examination of plaintiffs who claim they're injured, Facebook and Instagram, where they're saying they just ran the Peachtree Road Race. And the reality of it is people, we probably over-communicate in that today's world. We want everybody to know what we're doing and how our life is. When you're in a litigation, that's not always the best thing.
Sean's giving away all my secrets here. Closing some of my best investigative doors.
So social media matters. I've actually also seen people use it for the purpose of picking jurors. You know, in some jurisdictions, you get the pool of who your potential jury panel is weeks before. And so if you know that and you have the opportunity to investigate what that panel is talking about, what their views, who their thoughts are, who they believe in, what their political connections are, it's a big, big tool to find out who's potentially going to be on your jury.
Sean, I was just going to say, Walt was saying that his secret's out, but something tells me people will still post no matter how many times we tell them not to.
You can't help it.
No, it's an obsession.
It's crazy to me because once you put it out there, it never goes away.
And you hear these stories over and over and over again, and people will continue to do it. It's just too compelling to them.
Yeah. Well, and I can't tell you how many times I've been with a client and had to say, you need to listen to what your attorney is telling you. I mean, it is such a mantra with us because you hire a good attorney, but you don't listen to their advice. And it just makes no sense. I mean, you're really shooting yourself in the foot. And Jeff, you know, you deal with a lot more of the corporate business side. What kind of things are you seeing from your clients along those lines? I mean, I know every corporation has a Facebook page and things like that. You dealing with any challenges in that arena when you are dealing with litigation?
Well, you know, it's almost a damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if you don't have the page, then it tends to creep out some way else. And then if you do have the page, you can tell your employees over and over again, don't do this, don't do that. But I don't find that works too well, and they'll do it anyway. I mean, yes, you want to have a corporate policy, especially in an employment litigation situation that's precluding them from doing this and doing that. But then at the same time, there's court rulings that say they're entitled to do this and entitled to do that too. And then, I mean, heck, you can even get into whether they're contractors or employees or not, and then you can get into FLSA sort of situation. So there's no easy answer for employers. I mean, you just got to try to hire the best employees you can and put out the best protocol you can, and then, you know, hammer it home and hope for the best. I don't think there's any, you know, panacea for something like that.
When you're dealing with a defense case, how much does the HR side of things come in to play? Employee handbooks, you know, training, those sorts of things. And kind of thinking as an employer myself, or as part of a team of people that is managing a business, what are the things that, you know, from your perspective, we need to be doing well to mitigate some of those issues?
Well, you already hit it on the head with employee books and manuals and training for employees. You know, you've got to have, unfortunately, I saw this in a case a couple weeks ago, small company, didn't exactly have an HR person, and I don't think that they did anything wrong, but in an employment context, that was one of the things that the plaintiff tried to argue, is you don't have an HR person. So, I mean, I think it's getting to the point in time where, you know, small companies are going to have to task somebody with that, even though there may not be the manpower necessarily to do it easily. But yes, you have to be as proactive as possible, because otherwise you're going to put yourself in the situation where a good plaintiff's attorney will be able to exploit it and say, well, you didn't do that. And we can still fight it a lot of times on liability, but it's harder when you don't have the protocol in place. So everything you can do, you should do if you can do it. And we just try to make ourselves available to clients in that regard.
I know from the employment side of the house, from our company, one of the things that we try to make sure that we're doing well and encourage our clients with is to have good, consistent execution of those policies as well. Because I think that when you see an issue where one employee is treated differently than another employee and there becomes an issue, that that can be a major problem as well.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Even when you have some an employer is trying to meet like the Disability Act or something like that, it can then create the impression that of favoritism. You get into all kinds of issues with ethnicity or religion in that regard. You made the accommodation for somebody, you know, because they couldn't do this, and some people don't understand, well, we did that because of a physical disability. It really is difficult, but you have to manage it. You have to manage it as quickly as you can, because the entry level. I mean, when people are coming into the corporation, you have to explain to them, you know, this is how we do business. If you have an issue, you need to go to your supervisor or to this person. All of that helps prevent gaps that a good plaintiff's attorney can exploit. And they're not, and I don't mean exploit in a negative way. I'm just saying, you know, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to represent their client in the best way possible, and the best way possible is to, you know, put their client's case on the best footing possible. And we have to do the same on the defense side, and the best way we can do it is to avoid issues before they arise as often as possible.
Preparation.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's something you have to do in every facet.
Yeah. Yeah. And prevention too, like you were talking about how people might know a situation that could have been harmful before it actually ever happened. I know of a case where somebody actually tripped and fell in a hole in a parking lot, and they had to find out whether the person that owned that building that had the parking lot actually knew the hole was there beforehand. If there are similar things like that you could talk about?
Yeah, the law typically, as relates to premise liability cases in all jurisdictions, typically require a notice requirement.
And gotcha.
You're just not going to hold. I always tell clients, just because you was injured or hurt at someone's property doesn't mean they're liable.
Gotcha.
What
yeah.
brings the liability is specifically their knowledge or their that they should have known about the dangerous condition based on the protocol that Jeff was talking about mm-hmm. and what information they had. And so
right.
our job when we get involved is we handle cases where if a third party criminal hurts or injures or kills someone on a property, Georgia law allows you to bring a lawsuit against the property owner if they fail to provide a reasonable safe premises. For that place, and if they could have done something, i.e. provided additional security, mm-hmm. Controlled the entrance ways or exits to prevented the incident, there's an opportunity for a plaintiff to sue a property owner or business owner.
And as that's huge.
It is. And if, you know, very wise lawyers who represent these businesses, like Jeff would tell their clients up front, you need to, if you got information, you need to do something with it.
Right. Don't push it under the rug.
Exactly. The problem I can imagine for clients and when Jeff is advising them is how much information you want to know. I've had cases where when I pulled the police reports at the property, the public records, there was not a lot of crime on the property. So if you don't mm-hmm. have a lot of crime, that's actually a good thing for a defendant or a property owner.
Right.
But when we filed lawsuits and we got their internal records showed a lot of crime on the property. And so sometimes getting information or once you get information can also hurt you. It's a fine line I can imagine that defendants walk.
Right.
The reality of it is this: you do everything in your power financially and economically to provide a safe premise for your invitees, your guests, and whatever information you learn or should know, do your best with it. Mm-hmm. Because if you can show you did something, a lot of the cases that I have that have bad outcomes for defendants is not only do they not do anything with the information, they get the information, they do nothing.
Oh, yeah. And that doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't look good. You got to do something. It
looks good for him.
Yeah. Yeah, great.
That's
for
a good
him.
Day for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. And the notice thing that we're talking about also applies in commercial litigation. The, mm-hmm. the laws The DOT, when you're dealing with trucking cases, require truck companies or motor carriers to do a detailed investigation of anybody who's going to operate a commercial vehicle for obvious reasons. Those are big vehicles, safety issues on the road. Mm-hmm. And you got to do background checks as a matter of law. And once you get that information, you need to make sure you use it in an appropriate way to make sure you have safe people on the road.
Awesome. This has been a great discussion.
Yeah. I was going to say, I had a conversation with a business owner in an industry that has people driving trucks. It's a service industry. Driving trucks to people's houses and businesses, and has these employees going into residences, commercial properties. So we were just talking about the importance of a background check, making sure their driving history is clean, making sure they're not on the sex offender registry. The owner's comment back to me, Jeff, this will horrify you. Sean, you will pray that these guys...
It won't shock me, though.
No, it won't. The owner said, well, I just assume that all the guys in this industry are criminals, so I just don't do background checks.
And, please don't tell Sean the name of that company.
I hope it's not my company.
It is not. No, it's not your company.
My office manager didn't say that.
But when they said that, I just about fell out of my chair, and I said, you know, you really need to talk to an attorney and figure this one out, because you're going to get yourself in a lot of trouble. And, I mean, I would assume something like that could cost them a ton of money. I'm sure there's something in their insurance policy that says that they should be doing those, need to be doing those. But I was just horrified when I heard that.
Yeah, and then there's the possibility that the gentleman had made the comment to somebody else, and that someone like Sean will discover that in discovery, and then we'll be looking at punitive damages.
They probably tweeted it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, they probably did.
I have one last question. When you do the background check, and I guess that's mostly for you, how far back do you go? Like, can you go all the way back, or does it have to be 5 years?
Right now, in Georgia, you can go back to age 18. And that's on criminal history. On driving record, 7 years is the maximum. You can do 5 or 7 years. But age 18 right now is the law. There's a lot of discussion about really tightening that up, making it 7 years, and making it a 7-year maximum on background checks. But if right now as an employer, you can go back as far as you want to. The industry standard is typically 7 years.
Gotcha. Okay, does anybody else have anything? I think we're going to wrap up here in just a second. I think it was a great conversation.
No, I thank you for the opportunity. The interesting about it, we kind of talked, and obviously me representing plaintiffs, you know, when things bad happens, you know, I'm involved in it. But the reality of it is, and what's important about this discussion is, I don't want to see anybody injured or hurt, and none of us do. No matter what side we're on. So we would prefer, regarding this society, that everybody do their best to make sure that people are protected and safe regarding their businesses. And the more information we can obtain on things before they happen, is just better for everybody. Now, things happen. That's life. And as a result of that, Jeff, myself, and Walt are going to be employed. But to the extent we can protect each other and look out for each other, no matter what side you're on, I think it's the best thing. I don't like to meet clients who lost loved ones because of things like this. I really don't.
From neglect.
Yeah. So.
And I think from the employer's perspective, you know, they have the opportunity, and I have great pleasure in representing them, because they almost always take every opportunity that's available to them. And then you're in the position of defending somebody who, you know, what we call pure accidents do happen, to the extent they can be minimized, that's great. But accidents will happen, and sometimes we just have to remember that they're just accidents.
Right, that's a good point.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to come in again, and
absolutely,
you know, definitely enjoyed hearing from Jeff and Sean and getting their perspective on some things. And but I appreciate the opportunity to be here again.
Yeah, and we look forward to having you guys back soon.
Thanks much. We'll be happy to.
We'll love it.
Thank you so much for listening to Atlanta Legal Experts. You can find all of our guests' full bios on the website at atlantalegalexperts.com. And again, this show is brought to you by 3A Law Practice Management and Peachtree Offices. Emily Rowell signing out.